will have your all's own person, a man that's been around, I think he told me 42 years or 49 years. He's been around a long time in the church and the church of God, I'm trying to say. And we just ask that you listen up, and he's going to give the first message, Mr. Baumgartner.
Thank you, Mr. Shoemaker, and good morning, brethren. The title for my sermon today is The Rest of the Story. It's a sermon that I've thought about over the years. I've never given it in full before, but I've got about a two-hour sermon that I'm going to try to squeeze into 35, 40 minutes at most. So you may want to write down these verses. I'll skip through certain passages to try to get to the basics of what I want to cover. This sermon will not be politically correct. It will not be balanced. That's the reason I entitled it The Rest of the Story. It's not balanced. Over the years, I've heard dozens and dozens of sermons about the women in the Bible, and they've been good sermons. I have no complaint about what was said. I can find no fault at all about that. But what I'm going to talk about is what was not covered in those sermons, and there is quite a bit, at least where I've been, that was not covered. So my only purpose today is to promote the family structure the way that God ordained from the beginning, from the very beginning. So my first verse is Genesis 2 and verse 18, and the last part of that verse, it says, God speaking here about Adam, he says, I will make him an help meet for him. Meet for him. If you look that phrase up in Strong's, that meet is one who helps. One who helps. So Eve was created to be a helper to Adam. That was the purpose that she was created. Now I want to go to Genesis 3, and I'll skip through verses 3 through 6. But verse 3, you know how Eve was tempted in the garden by Satan? And Eve's words to Satan were, in verse 3, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. So Eve knew exactly what God's instructions were. She repeated them back to Satan. There's no doubt that she knew what they were. But she didn't understand the full meaning of it, obviously, as we'll see later. Verse 4, the serpent said back to Eve, you shall not surely die. So that's the first lie that we know of that's recorded in the Bible when Satan disputed God and said, no, you won't die. And he encouraged Eve then to go ahead and partake the tree that was forbidden. Not the tree of life, but the other tree, the tree of good and evil. In verse 6, last part of the verse, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. That was Adam's mistake. Adam was the head of that family. Eve was not supposed to be the head of the family. She was not supposed to be the leader, the teacher. God instructed Adam, and Adam was basically responsible for instructing Eve. But we know that Eve did know that she was doing wrong here. But unless someone gets the idea that this is some kind of tirade against women, it is not. Adam was more guilty than Eve because Adam knew that it was a sin. Uh, let's just go to Genesis 3:17, and he says, God said unto Adam, because you have hearkened unto the voice of your wife, cursed is the ground for your sake, and sorrow shall you eat of it all the days of your life. God says specifically the reason that Adam made the mistake and he was cursed because of it was because that he obeyed the voice of his wife. God did not intend that. It was supposed to be the other way around. So Adam was cursed because of it. Of course, if we read on, we know Eve also had penalties to pay because she sinned. She sinned. But the point is, Adam was more guilty. Adam was the one that was given the responsibility, and he gave it up. He gave it up. He turned it over to his wife. And they both were punished because of it, because she led him to do it and because he accepted her teaching, which was wrong. And that should not be, as it says in the New Testament, in 1 Timothy 2 and verse 12, it says, I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to usurp. Usurp is the key word here. Authority over the man. And going on down that same passage in verse 14, Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived was in the transgression. Yes, she was in the transgression, all right, but so was Adam. So was Adam. This began an ever-increasing evil that led God to destroy all human life except for 8 people off of the face of the earth. This very thing led to that. As we know, the first follow-up there was when Cain killed Abel. They had trouble in their family all through their life. Also in James 3 and verse 1, it says, my brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. In this case, Adam received the greater condemnation. It was his fault. It was his fault. He had the authority and the position, the authority from God, that he did not have to follow his wife. In fact, he should not have in this particular case. This is information that Satan hates. I know, and I have known for years and years, Satan literally hates this information, because if you understand it, you can shut the door to Satan in many cases, because his door into the family is through a wife that will usurp authority over her husband. That gives him an open door, because God rules through the man to the woman, to the children. This cannot be overemphasized. Failure to heed these instructions has caused much of the trouble in the world over the years. Now, let's fast forward to the time of Abraham. And we've heard much about Sarah and how important she was in the early days of the Old Testament church. But I'll skip through, this is Genesis 16, I'll skip through verses 2, right on down through about 12 or so. But verse 2, last part of it. Well, I'll read from the beginning. And Sarah said unto Abraham, behold, now the Lord has restrained me from marrying. I pray you, go in unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children for her. And Abraham hearkened to the voice of Sarah. Abraham did not have to hearken to the voice of Sarah. In fact, Abraham should not have hearkened to the voice of Sarah, because they both knew what God had promised, that they would have a child. Sarah got impatient and didn't want to wait on God, and decided, well, you know, I'm too old and that, and maybe God wants me to have a child that has a different mother. And she convinced Abraham then to go in and have this child by Hagar. So again, who is at fault here? Well, it was Sarah's idea, but Abraham was more at fault because he gave up his position as head of the family, and he decided to follow Abraham decided to follow Sarah. Again, it was the man's responsibility. It was Abraham's responsibility, and he did not fulfill it. He absolutely did not fulfill his responsibility. So anyway, we know what happened, that Hagar, she conceived in verse 4, and when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. In other words, Hagar began to despise Sarah. You know, I'm the one with the child. In those days, it's important to understand that it was very important for women to have children. They felt like it was a dishonor if they did not have children. It was some kind of a curse. If they were married for a long period of time and did not have children, they felt as if, though, it was some kind of a curse. So, you know, women really wanted to have children. And Sarah, of course, wanted to have children, but she was impatient and would not wait for God. Abraham followed her, and he made a mistake. Verse 4 here says, he went in to Hagar, and she conceived when she... I read that one. Verse 5, Sarah said unto Abraham, my wrong be upon you. I have given my maid into your bosom, and when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. And then she says, the Lord judge between me and you. It appears that she was kind of blaming Abraham for the whole thing. You know, he says, let God judge who's to blame here. And of course, Abraham was to blame more than Sarah, because he chose to give up his position. Well, Sarah dealt harshly with Hagar, and Hagar fled into the wilderness where an angel appeared unto her. That's verse, I guess I paraphrased that. Going on down to verse 10. The angel of the Lord said unto her, I will multiply your seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for a multitude. Now, this is talking to Hagar here. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, behold, you are with child, and shall bear a son, and shall call his name Ishmael. God named him Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard your affliction. And he, listen how this son is going to be. You know, God knew from the beginning. There was a big mistake made here. He said, he will be a wild man. His hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him. Does that bring anything to mind in today's situation? Are there any wild men in the world who's against every other man if they don't adopt their exact philosophy and belief? Well, those are descendants of this very man here. We have had trouble in the world, great trouble, ever since, because of this one mistake. And again, I'm not blaming the woman. It was the man's responsibility. He gave up the position. He failed to fulfill the position that God gave him. I know this is not politically correct, and that's why I haven't given the sermon in this tone and this detail before, ever, in 45 years, even though I've been aware of these situations for many, many years. And I guess I've somewhat fallen into the same trap of a lot of other people. Well, you know, we better be politically correct because some people may be offended. Well, we could... We could go on down to Rebekah. Do you remember Rebekah tricked Isaac into blessing Jacob over Esau? Well, it wasn't Rebekah's place to trick Isaac. But Esau had sold his birthright to Jacob. We know that. We're told that in the Bible. But did he really have the authority to do that? Esau wasn't the head of the family, nor was Rebekah the head of the family. Isaac was head of the family. Isaac was the one that should be in charge, and Isaac was the one that should determine where the birthright goes. Now, I don't really know whether God was involved in the deal of Jacob, Esau selling the birthright. I know it was a mistake, and for that reason, I think that God did not influence that. God did not cause that mistake to happen, or that sin, if you will, to happen. I don't believe he did. Even though once something happens, God gets involved, and often he uses a situation that has resulted because of a sin, but he uses it for good. We know about that in the case of Joseph, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But I want to go on down now to Jacob. We know that Jacob served for 7 years for Rachel, and then Lebanon told him, says, "Well, in our country, you know, the older sister has to marry off first, so I'm going to give you Leah instead of Rachel, the one you loved, but you can serve me another 7 years, and then I'll give you Rachel too," which he did. So he ended up actually serving 14 years for Rachel. He loved Rachel. There is no question about anybody's mind at that time or since that Jacob loved Rachel. But going on with the story, let's go to Genesis 29 and verse 30 here. He loved also Rachel more than Leah and served with him yet another 7 years. And verse 31, when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. The implication is that God closed up Rachel's womb and opened Leah's womb. So Leah conceived and bare a son named Reuben, and then she had Simeon, Levi, and Judah. She had four sons. That was the first four sons of Jacob. They were all born to Leah, not Rachel, not the one he loved. In Genesis 30, verse 1, when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said unto Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." Here you have another woman who is beginning to blame her husband, you know, as if, you know, "You don't love me, you haven't given me any children. You gave four to Rachel, to Leah already." That was the implication. She said, "You give me some children unless I die." Verse 2, and Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, "Am I in God's place who hath withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" You know, am I the one that opens the womb and closes the womb? Can I do anything about it? You know, it was pretty obvious it wasn't altogether Jacob's fault, because he loved Rachel, but Leah ended up with four children and Rachel with none at this time. So verses 3 through 8, then Rachel talked Jacob into marrying her handmaid, Bilhah. And they had two sons. The next two sons of Jacob were born to Rachel's handmaid, not to Rachel. Again, Rachel thought she could have children who had another mother. "I'm not your real mother, but they'll be my children." So Leah, not to be outdone, in verses 9 through 13, if you want to skip through there, Leah, not to be outdone, gave her handmaid also to Jacob, and she bore Jacob two more children. Now we have, you know, eight sons of Jacob, and Rachel doesn't have any. And then after that, one evening as Jacob was coming out of the field, if you can find this is in verses 14 through 16, if you want to follow on through, Leah came out and says, "I have hired your presence for the night. You come and stay with me tonight because I gave Rachel some mandrakes so that she would agree to it, and instead of you going home to the one you love, you stop by and spend the night with me." Okay, he did so, and it ended up that Leah had two more children. Now, there's 10 children born to Jacob, but the woman he loved had none. 10. And the wife that he worked 14 years for, the one that he really loved, had no children. I don't know exactly why all of this happened, but finally, Rachel had Joseph. That would be the 11th son of Jacob. And then after that, she had Benjamin, but that was after they left. After they left Laban and headed back towards Jerusalem. But God had blessed Jacob considerably, even though Laban was dishonest. He promised him all of the speckled cattle and all of the brown sheep, and God worked it out. So most of the cattle that were born were like that. They were either speckled or the sheep were brown, and they according to the agreement, they belonged to Jacob. But Laban didn't like that. And Laban changed the rules 10 different times. You can read that. I don't know if you want to read through verses 27 to 43. He changed the rules 10 different times on Jacob, and in spite of that, God blessed him anyway. And he ended up with most of the cattle, so there began to be friction between Laban and Jacob. And Laban's other sons started to say that Jacob is, you know, he's stolen away all of our property, you know, the property that belonged to our father and would have been ours, now it belongs to Jacob. And Jacob knew about that, so he sneaked away. He gathered up his wives and children and his cattle, and he left without Laban having knowledge of it. You know, he slipped away. But if you want to go to Genesis 31 and verse 19, Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. Now, I don't know if this had anything to do with Rachel, you know, wanting children, not having them or not, but it appears that God did close up her womb. But Laban was an idol worshiper, and Rachel, in fact, when they left, she stole her father's God. She, you know, that meant a lot to her. Her father's God meant a lot to her, obviously, because it was the God that she could steal and hide in the saddle of the camel and get away with it. And that's exactly what she did, and it caused tremendous friction between Laban, and in fact, Laban followed Jacob and threatened him, and Jacob didn't know anything about the idol. And Laban said, you know, that you stole my God. Jacob said, well, we'll find out who did it, and you know, you can pretty well do with the one that took it anything you want to. But Laban didn't know it was his daughter, and his daughter kept it hid. She was sitting on the camel saddle and said, you know, it was hid under her. And she said, I can't get up, you know, it's the way of women. And her father let her go and didn't find his God. But that caused all kinds of problems. All kinds of problems. But before they got back to Jerusalem, Rachel died in childbirth when she bore Benjamin, which was the 12th son of Jacob. Now, let's go on. I'm running out of time fast. Let's go on to, what about Miriam and Aaron? Remember the time when Miriam and Aaron rose up against Moses, Exodus 12, verse 1 through, going right on down through 15. But verse 1, and Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian, and they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only to Moses? Has not spoken also by us? The Lord heard it. The Lord heard it. So we know what happened there. Verse 10, Miriam became leprous, white as snow. And Moses prayed for her, and God did remove the leprosy after she was put out of the camp for 7 days. But there's again a woman rising up trying to take the position. You know, it's odd. It doesn't say anything about Aaron. Both of them rose up against Moses, but Miriam was the one that got punished or was leprous. But anyway, Moses prayed for her, and she was healed after she was shut out for about 7 days. Now, fast forward down to the time of Solomon. Solomon. First Kings 11, verses 1, and if you want to pick it up, the whole passage, you can go right on down through verse 11. But anyway, verse 1, Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh. Verse 2, Of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, you shall not go in to them, neither shall they come in to you, for surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods. But Solomon clave to these women in love. In verse 3, Solomon had 700 wives. 700 wives. Princes, it says, and 300 concubines. That adds up to 1,000 different women that he had. And his wives turned away his heart. And we know the rest of the story. In verse 9, the Lord was angry with Solomon because, well, let's back up verse 7. Solomon built high places for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, and for Molech, the abomination of the children of Ammon. So he built temples for these false gods that his wives worshiped. Again, he followed his wives, and God was very, very angry. In verse 11, I will surely rend the kingdom from you and will give it to your servant. And God did. He took, you know, most of the kingdom, actually. He took the 10 tribes that came to be called the lost 10 tribes. He took them away from Solomon's descendants and gave them to Solomon's general. That happened. That was not a good thing. But it was Solomon's wives who turned him aside, turned him away from God. Again, he gave up the authority that God gave him and chose to let his wives rule. Now, the main thing, and I am going too far, but I've got to get this last one in. Ahab. I'll just try to tell the story. You can find it in 1 Kings 16 and 18 and 21 and going right on down to 2 Kings verse 9. But I'll just tell you the story, and you can check it out in these chapters. Ahab was an evil, evil man. He's married to Jezebel. And Ahab wanted to buy a vineyard, and the neighbor wouldn't sell it to him. And he was sad. And Jezebel come in and says, "Why are you so sad?" You know, he said, "Well, this neighbor of mine, I wanted to buy his vineyard and he wouldn't sell it to me." And Jezebel told him, he said, "Aren't you the king?" He said, "I'll get the vineyard for you." So she had the neighbor killed so that her husband could have the vineyard that he wanted. Again, Ahab gave up his responsibility. He was king of Israel. But Jezebel ruled Israel. And we know the story then that, let me see. Well, it ended up, we know the story of, let's see, was it? Eli. No, not Eli. I can't come up with the name. Sorry. Anyway, the story is that Elijah, okay, finally. Elijah called down fire from heaven and consumed all of the meat on the altar and all of that, and he ended up killing all of the ministers, if you will, of Jezebel, false ministers, and there were dozens and dozens of them that he killed. Also, Ahab had 70 sons, and they were scattered around, and God was taking the kingdom from him and giving it to Jehu, and he told Jehu to go have those sons killed, and they killed them. They cut their heads off, something like we see going on today. And they put each one in a basket, and they brought it back to Ahab, his 70 different sons. In the New Testament, we're told, God says, talking about Jezebel, because Jezebel became the name came to be a byword for a woman who usurps authority over her husband. In the New Testament, Revelation 20, "Notwithstanding, I have a few things against you, because you suffer that woman Jezebel, which called herself a prophetess, to teach and to seduce my servants to commit fornication and to eat things sacrificed unto idols." In summary, we know Jesus is the chief cornerstone, the ultimate foundation if we're to ever have a right kind of a society. But under Jesus, the family itself is the foundation of any and every stable society. Of course, for a family to function properly, the husband has to obey his head, which is Jesus. You know, that's a given. That must happen to have a stable family. Don't want to leave that part out. But he's not doing his job if he turns his responsibility over to his wife. He's just not. Satan often in a family situation where there is a husband and wife living together, Satan often rules through any woman who has usurped the authority over the man, and the man has given up that authority because it's an open door for Satan, absolute open door for Satan. You might as well hang out the welcome mat and say, "Come in, Satan." It's a fact. And Satan hates this information. I've known for years he literally hates this information. He will throw up every obstacle that is possible for him to throw up against you and I understanding this simple fact. Because if we understand it and apply it the way we should, it closes a door to Satan. It closes a door. And this cannot be overemphasized. And failure to heed these instructions has caused much of the world's trouble. Part of it is what's going on with ISIS today. Remember the wild man? Well, he's got thousands of offspring, descendants alive today, causing trouble. But it started with a mistake a long time ago. Of course, it's continued with the same mistake being repeated again and again and again. I know of no incident in the Bible where a wife has assumed authority over her husband that turned out well. Not a single one. I don't know of a single one in the Bible. Next time, God willing, if I have the privilege of giving another split sermon, I will describe how that very problem has impacted this area. How that we went from 150 Sabbath keepers in attendance on average every Sabbath in Prestonsburg down to 15. And why? And why it happened. And more important than that, I will tell you God's solution to the problem, and it's spelled out in detail in the Bible, and I bet you haven't heard it. You may have read over it casually and maybe missed it. I've done that a lot of times. It's in the Bible. But God has a detailed plan of how He will solve the problem. And God willing, I will bring that to you.